Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 697. Science Faction, we were wrong about cerebral palsy and the vaccine to end the flu.
We were wrong about, like, was the, yeah, right. We did close last episode with, we found the cure to cerebral palsy, everybody. Wait till next week when we tell you exactly what this common everyday household item, if used properly, will completely cure CP.
We're both old and therefore out of touch, but I recently had a friend show me their TikTok. And, like, just how bad that is in terms of, like, half-witted 25-year-old stay-at-home moms advising other moms to, like, put a little bleach in their kid's bottle to get rid of autism. Like, it is unbelievable. I almost thought it was, like, a SNL-type farce, but it turns out that's, like, 60% of what TikTok is.
Yeah, it's like people make personalized videos. What's shocking is the confidence they deliver the medical advice with. Like they're used car salesmen trying to make a sale. Buy the car. Just say yes. Buy it. Sign the paper.
And speaking of the used car salesman of this show, I, of course, am your host, super old guy and comedian Robert Timothy. And with me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
I don't TikTok either, but I'm thinking about it now. I think it's being banned.
Mm.
There was a TikTok ban. We're going to see if it holds up. But like, I kind of claim to be like counterculture and against things.
Sure.
But so now that like I'm not supposed to have TikTok, I'm very incentivized to get TikTok.
But would it be counterculture if it is by definition like the biggest thing in the culture?
If the government is literally shutting it down, I think it doesn't matter at this point. Like, yeah, it could be huge. Yes, all the youths are doing it for a reason. But if the old crusty,
by that same logic, you should be putting asbestos in your house.
Yes, which brings me to my next point. We were wrong about asbestos. It's fucking awesome as well. Take that, insulation.
Dear, you go ahead and check out our Patreon if you want a bunch more horrible medical advice every single week. You get 4 additional science articles and 1 piece of medical advice that will kill you every single week.
In Footloose, a movie, by the way, I keep using as a reference, but I've never seen.
Me neither.
But John Lithgow was one guy, a minority and an authority figure. The kids far outnumbered that one crusty asshole. So, I mean, I would argue that the counterculture was, despite their numbers, was still the youths. The cool counterculture trying to dance.
Wouldn't it be great if somebody bought up the rights to Footloose and then made like, I don't know, they might have Footloose 2. If they don't, they would put out like Footloose 2. And in Footloose 2, while dancing, the guy gets a compound fracture that gets infected and he ends up dying and starting a plague through that infection that spreads throughout the community. And like everybody looks at John Lithgow and they're like, he was right. Like, you shouldn't dance.
That is such a specific punishment that you would assume it was biblical.
Yeah.
Like, that is such a horrible Job. Job defied his father's orders and danced. And
Let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
God, Christian mythology fucking sucks, man. Like there's so many other mythologies that you're listening to. Greek mythology.
Sure.
A lot of Native American. Oh, like the tales, like, do they just really, they have a message at the end, but it's also just a cool, fun story to tell a kid. Like for some reason, everything that comes out of Christian mythology just sucks ass.
You could also tell Greek mythology as like patriarchal as, you know, Christianity is. Greek mythology was more so because the head god Zeus just fucking everybody. Like, that was like, that is their idea of a god. He's gonna turn into a bull and fuck people. He's gonna fuck other goddesses. He's gonna fuck regular. This guy is the king of kings. He is doing some fucking. And meanwhile, Jesus almost never got laid.
That's why the Greek pantheon was, they were, you could identify with them. Like, they were like, oh, they were these gods, I get it. Like, as if you could. Like, I happen to believe in the boys theory of superheroes. If you are a god,
yeah,
or practically a god,
sure,
especially back in ancient Greece, it's not long until you're Homelander. It's
I'm gonna go ahead and disagree with that. I will say though, I gotta call this before we get into science articles. This is kind of impressive. Those of you guys who were listening a while back, a couple weeks ago, Damien brought up the idea of chronic wasting disease, a prion disease in deers jumping over into humans. And I commented, well, you know, we actually don't have any evidence that that disease can actually infect humans. You know, we know it's in deer and it has been for a while, but we have no evidence. Like, almost as we were recording that episode, the first ever cases, like reported cases of chronic wasting disease from deer in humans, we're not 100% sure, but there's pretty darn good evidence. The first ever two cases were reported in humans. So, like, in a weird serendipitous thing, you may have actually caused chronic wasting disease in human beings, Damien.
Like there were literally thousands of cases loaded and like had been brewing for 10 years, yeah, 15 years in some hillbilly's brain. And me saying that provided the karmic irony needed in order for the sleeper agents to activate.
You did the equivalent of standing in front of a mirror and said chronic wasting disease three times in the dark.
Alex Jones here. Listen, that's Bobby. Bobby, for long enough, you stare into the void long enough, Bobby, and eventually Alex Jones stares back into you.
All right, let's get on to the actual articles this week. Article number one, we may have been seriously wrong about cerebral palsy.
Hey, Bobby, I'll go get like a soda. Can I get a dollar? I'm kind of broke these days.
If I were to lend it to you, I would have to first give it to the victims of the Sandy Hook massacre to then distribute to you.
Somebody's best friends with the judge. Somebody's clearly going to report every little fucking interaction we have.
Hey, I got a loophole, which is I mostly get paid in chili and chili precursor products.
I'm allowed to be a courier. I'm allowed to try to work my debt off. So, like, if you were to say, need a Slurpee from 7-Eleven, I would go. And then if the Slurpee were just gone by the time I got there, I would just consider that my tip.
I survive off that little bit that pops out of the top hole of the Slurpee dome when you overfill it. I do 300 to 400 Slurpees a day and just survive off that.
Come on, Bobby. Listen, I need that dollar, man. They have a chili flavor of Slurpee.
It's actually just chili I put in the Slurpee cup, but it's the same.
They'll yell at you, but they can't. They're not police officers. They're not allowed to put their hands on you. So you're fine.
So, article number one, we may have been seriously wrong about cerebral palsy.
Like, what outlandish statements were we making on this show? I don't know. I don't know.
Cerebral palsy's caused by the devil.
When I was at Sacramento State, I worked as a home health care aide. And I actually got to be like a kind of a cool Angels in the Outfield style, like positive big brother type influence on a kid with cerebral palsy who lived in the dorms at Sac State. And so I think it was that. If anything, I don't think I've been wrong. I think I've approached cerebral palsy with a very open mind and have learned. I don't know that I've made broad statements in my years.
Except the statement I made about my time being his healthcare provider, which is, it's really easy to steal from people with cerebral palsy. And that's true. That is a fact. I saw it. I performed it.
He passed out with his shoes on, Bobby. And yes, as his home healthcare aide, that's my fault. I should have taken his shoes off and put them and helped him get to bed properly. That's on me. But even so, I got to prank him because we were drinking.
So this is a really interesting article led by an Australian team working out of China about the cause of a significant percentage of cerebral palsy cases. So a quick review about cerebral palsy. It's a movement disorder that involves poor coordination, stiff muscles, weak muscles, and tremors. It's lifelong, and it sometimes includes things like seizures and thinking and reasoning problems. We have known for a while that there is a range of causes. You know, this is clearly caused by some damage to the brain, and that brain can be caused, we think, mostly during pregnancy, actually. Like, 3/4 of cerebral palsy cases, we think, are caused during pregnancy. We know that things that can happen during pregnancy could be something like an infection or trauma to the actual fetus, like physical trauma. Also, after pregnancy, things like head trauma later in life, and then also during the actual birthing process, lack of oxygen to the brain, which happens in a shockingly high percentage of births, we believe that this was the cause of a lot of cerebral palsy as well. So this article looked at a large percentage of cerebral palsy cases in China and found that approximately 1/4 of them were actually caused by a genetic defect. Prior, we thought only about 2% of cerebral palsy cases were caused by a genetic defect. And this actually is in line with other Australian studies, because again, this is an Australian team, that show up to 1/3 of cerebral palsy cases are likely caused by this particular genetic defect. And most of these have been attributed to oxygen deprivation at birth. So that was actually something I had heard a lot. I had heard that cerebral palsy is often caused by oxygen deprivation at birth, which again can happen quite a bit. It happens with the cord wraps around the baby's neck. It happens with a lot of different things during the birthing process. And a lot of times cerebral palsy is attributed to that. Because remember, you don't know that a child has cerebral palsy until much later. You don't know until they, you know, don't sit up at the same rate as kids, the babies their age, or walk or do these other things. And so you look back and go, well, yeah, they had a difficult birth and we had some oxygen deprivation. But what they were realizing was a lot of babies have oxygen deprivation. They don't end up having cerebral palsy. And what we were kind of attributing to it wasn't not necessarily cause and effect. So this article, here's a quote from Nature Medicine where it's published. They used modern genomic sequencing and found mutations were significantly higher in CP cases with birth asphyxia, indicating a lack of oxygen could be secondary to the underlying genetic defect, unquote. Now, again, that means that we could be seeing that the lack of oxygen is a contributing factor, but the actual genetics are the underlying factor that are causing it, maybe even the more serious one, and maybe that lack of oxygen isn't even really that big a deal. So this is shocking for a lot of reasons. One is, how did we get this so wrong? And the answer is, one is that delay, the delay between the event, the birth event itself, and, you know, the onset of cerebral palsy symptoms. But the second thing, too, is we just haven't had the ability to do such in-depth genetic sequencing for a long time, especially in big parts of the world. And so this is basically allowing us to look at the genetic profile of children who exhibit cerebral palsy and say, yeah, maybe they had oxygen deprivation. Maybe the oxygen deprivation contributed to it. But it turns out they also seem to have defects in these specific genes that were able to kind of cause, maybe even if we start doing in utero studies, predict that potential for cerebral palsy later on in life. The team identified 81 different genes which cause mutations in children with those with cerebral palsy. The genes play roles in neural and embryonic development and also affect molecular pathways responsible for respiration, end quote. So super, super interesting. I think it's interesting for a few reasons, not just because, okay, well, wow, now we understand better what is causing this, but because if we know that, and especially if we do genetic screenings prior to birth through things like amniocentesis, or we're getting even better at finding ways to do it without dangerous things like amniocentesis, we can say it's very important for this specific child not to have oxygen deprivation because the combination of those two might be something that caused cerebral palsy, whereas in a child without these genetic defects, it would not. And so for this particular kid, maybe, you know, preventative C-section or something is a good call, whereas with kids who don't have that, we could maybe worry a little bit less about it.
I have something I'd want to run by you. Maybe looking at this from an outside perspective, you mentioned earlier that many children are oxygen deprived to some extent during childbirth, but only a certain percentage of them, the ones with who have the genetic propensity, are the ones who develop CP. Just as many people jackhang, but only a certain percentage of them perhaps the ones with the genetic propensity are the ones who die during their jack hanging. Do you think that there's a correlation genetically between the two?
Is jack hanging, is that an autoerotic asphyxiation reference?
Yes. When as the verb to put a belt or some other tying implement around one's neck and bring oneself to climax.
I see. Okay. It would be interesting to see if there was a sudden onset of like late adult onset cerebral palsy that was connected only to like the highly horny and danger seeking. Like if somebody was like, hey, I only got cerebral palsy later in life because I got super into autoerotic asphyxiation. And oh, and by the way, worth it.
Not what I'm saying. Maybe what I'm saying, but because we're just putting these ideas out there. There's no bad ideas in a brainstorm. Yeah. What I was proposing though is that you find out at that moment when you try to jack hang, but you find out that your brain just can't handle that lack of oxygen. Like you would have found that out had you had oxygen a little bit later and there was a doctor around at birth, but no doctor around. And you found out right then that you don't have that extra life built in. You don't have that extra one-up built into your brain.
Now, if I'm reading you right, which I think I am, what you're saying is a lot of babies are jerking off in the womb and then birth happens while they're still trying to pound one out. They then get the cord wrapped around their neck. That's where the cerebral palsy comes in. Also, possibly a lifelong affinity towards autoerotic asphyxiation.
I think you added a few things.
Did I? Oh, did I make this ridiculous?
Well, I mean, I don't think babies jack off in the womb. No, otherwise that amniotic sac fluid would be far grosser than it is. It's just a bunch of baby cum. Oh, God. The meconium actually is the clean stuff.
Just a bunch of baby cum is the subtitle of your new book.
You make it sound like I'm a shock jock. Please, I'm a shock podcaster.
Anyway, super, super interesting. One of the reasons I hope they figure this type of stuff out is, again, if you know somebody's risk factor for this is higher because they have these gene mutations, then you need to, you know, kind of pay some special attention, maybe preventative C-sections, maybe this kind of stuff. You could possibly prevent this. And again, this could be a lifelong, very serious condition that really affects somebody's.
And you do not let them jack hang.
No, don't. When,
as they get older.
Or as we just discussed, in utero.
No. We did not. No, you're making my serious science question ridiculous. You're making my serious outside. You know, like this is like, you know, have you seen like one of those CBS shows where like The Mentalist or something, where he walks into like the lab and all the scientists are dismissing his ideas because he's not a scientist? Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? Every once in a while you get a banger like the one you just heard.
I do like the idea too that every time you're like, oh, he's kicking, you like feel my stomach, and then you do that. That's just the baby jerking off.
And you've taken it, you've turned into something horrible.
That's right.
You've taken it into something ugly.
I want a very, very Catholic parent, mother, to like hear this, and then they feel the baby kicking and immediately just run into a wall at full speed as a punishment.
I was making a beautiful warning about jack hanging, about why you shouldn't do it, a PSA about jack hanging. And you turned it into baby cum.
It's like crabs. It's where all jokes end eventually.
It's the perfect life form. Yes, as you say regularly, crabs is the perfect life form.
On to article number two, a universal flu vaccine may have just been developed.
It's going to be hard to beat the last one, Bobby. It's going to be hard to beat. To beat the chuckles gotten on the last one. But let's give it a shot. See what the flu got.
So I'm super excited for this story. Those of you guys who have been listening for a while, for like 5 years or more, you know that prior to COVID, flu vaccination was kind of the soapbox that I frequently jumped on top of. And the reason is the flu kills 500,000 fucking people in the world every single year. It kills young. It kills old. Doesn't kill as many, you know, like healthy people. But it does kill a lot of, you know, babies and children and that kind of stuff. It kills a lot of elderly people. It kills a lot of immunocompromised people. It also causes a lot of non-death related problems, you know, sometimes permanent injury, but frankly, just, you know, feeling like shit. And it is almost completely stoppable. Now, there are some times when our flu vaccine is not well matched to the strain that's coming around, and then you can't do much about it. But if everybody went out and got a flu shot every single year, we would decrease deaths substantially. It's one of the easiest things you can do to literally save the lives of other people, because again, you are responsible for everybody downstream of you who catches a disease that you have, if it's preventable. So like, if you have the ability to go get a flu shot and you don't, and you're like, I'm young, I'm healthy, I can be sick for a week, and then somebody else gets sick down the stream, downstream from you, and then, you know, they give it to an old person, that old person would not have died if you had just gotten the fucking flu shot. So go get your fucking flu shot. So anyway, that's been my soapbox for many years.
I think that's why people don't do it. Like, I don't do it. Mm. Yeah, it is the easiest thing I could do to help save the lives of others, all right? But I'm not here to do the easiest thing when it comes to saving other people's lives, sure. Bobby. That's why I put myself through, that's why I have a concealed carry permit. Mm-hmm. And put myself through a Keanu Reeves-style obstacle training course.
Sure.
And that is why I, with my gun, constantly in my free time, hang out in public situations.
Just waiting.
That's how I save lives. Yes. Just staring at things.
I mean, you know what's funny is that is a ridiculous example. But like, honestly, if you went up to every one of those people who want to carry for that reason and you were just like, hey, you know, you could literally save lives right now just by getting a flu shot. I wonder how many people you get to do it, because you literally can. Like,
it doesn't play into their fantasy.
You can be
play into
a
their
fucking
fantasy.
Hero. You could save lives. Not even just save lives. You could save tons of misery. Like, in terms of just removing misery from the face of the earth, not getting people sick with the flu, which fucking sucks, even if you're healthy, is a huge thing you can do. So anyway, that has been my soapbox for a while. I think it's silly that not everybody gets that vaccine. You cannot find a person on earth who is more scared of needles than I am. I am fucking terrified of needles. I hate it. I will literally start shaking when I go. I still get my fucking flu shot because the ethics of staring down the face of some old lady in my neighborhood possibly dying 3 people downstream of me from catching the flu is intolerable to me, considering all I have to do is get this fucking little shot in my arm.
You also have kids, so you're like, the threat of you getting sick,
sure,
in your household is like way up there.
Sure.
So yeah, you're a big link in the chain.
Yes.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, that is true as well.
By the way, I like that gun-toting character we mentioned a second mm-hmm. ago. Like, by the way, that skit ends with him like talking to some minority kids. I'm like, because they're obviously committing a crime. Like, that's how that scene ends.
Or, the way you wouldn't expect it, it turns out it's a trank gun filled with the flu vaccine.
Wow, that dude is... That dude is just like, that guy was you, Bobby.
It was me.
That falling down Michael Douglas version of you.
So the flu is still here and still killing people, and we still need to figure it out. Obviously, we have to get an annual flu vaccine. That's not because the vaccine necessarily wears off. It's because the flu virus itself changes as it goes through the population. And it changes enough that last year's protection isn't going to protect you so great. It does offer some protection. Isn't going to protect you so great against the mutations after it kind of runs around the world and comes back around for our wintertime. It's not going to protect you well for it. Specifically, the head of the flu virus mutates enough, and that's where our binding sites are for our viruses, or for our vaccines. And so because that mutates enough to be slightly different, our antibodies don't recognize it and we can get sick once again. And again, flu vaccines aren't perfect. Even a good flu vaccine, maybe only 60-65% effective, but at least it's something, right? And even getting that every year is something, and you should go do that. What this paper out of Duke looked at was incredibly promising. By the way, I don't know if we talked about this before. You'd think at this day and age, I know they're like a long storied institution. I feel like if I was Duke, I'd be like, you know, our name is shit, right? Like, we should definitely change our name.
You should have that conversation with Brown. Ball State, but for another reason.
Your alma mater, Sac State.
Yeah. But like Duke, I don't know. Dookie is not, like, outside of the Green Day album, I don't know how many times I've actually said Dookie.
No, not Dookie, just a
shit.
Duke. Like that, it,
Duke.
Yes.
Outside of the nickname that we both knew a Duke,
sure,
as a guy because of a guy who shit himself.
Yes.
Outside of it being the perfect nickname for a dude who shits himself in his 20s, I don't know that I would use it that much either. So.
Right. Well, regardless, researchers at Huge Dump University have created a vaccine that targets a part of the virus that does not change as much through its annual mutation, making it more likely to be effective against different strains of the virus. So usually we target that head, like we talked about, of the hemagglutinin. But using a gene editing technique, they created a bunch of different variations of a hemagglutinin protein and were able to basically find one that was able that could work by targeting both the head and the stalk, which doesn't usually change nearly as much as it goes around. And if you were able to kind of protect against that stalk and stuff like that, those are integral parts of the flu. So if you could stop that one part, there is no flu virus that could survive that, you know, would be able to get around that because it needs that particular stalk. And they ended up kind of developing this new vaccine and testing it. And the experiment was tested on a bunch of mice and ferrets. And get this, Damien, 100% of the mice avoided illness or death from what should have been a lethal dose of the flu virus. That is amazing. 100%. Again, we are saying a good flu vaccine is like 70%, 60-something percent effective. This particular one was 100% with a bunch of different versions of the flu virus, all in lethal doses. That's fucking amazing because that means it has an incredible broad span of protection that it's granting. We use all the same, you know, normal caveats. These are in animal models, not human models. We don't know for sure that they would transfer over, but there's a really, really, really good indication they would, especially for something like the transmissibility of the flu. This isn't, you know, neurological testing or something like this. This is really, really interesting. And the opportunity of this to, like, just basically revolutionize what we consider flu vaccines, because it would mean that you get a flu vaccine, and as long as that vaccine is effective, it will protect you from basically all of the types of the flu. So you might have to get a flu vaccine every 5 years or 6 years. And unlike the current ones that are only 60 or 70% effective, it would be, who knows, maybe as much as 100 or close to 100% effective if these trials are to be kind of extrapolated. That would be amazing, because think about it. That doesn't just mean you don't get the flu. That means theoretically, the flu could die out. I mean, if you get enough people, it wouldn't even take enough people in like everywhere around the world. If you get enough people in one part of the world that the flu kind of needs to be in to survive before it comes back and sweeps back around somewhere else when the seasons change, if you get enough people vaccinated, you could literally just take a link out in the chain and keep this fucking thing from spreading around the world.
So any max vaccination would have to like be heavily focused, like starting in Asia, right?
That would be very useful. But even if we just did it here or any place, any link in that transmission chain, you would see huge die-offs. We already saw entire strains of the flu die out during the COVID lockdowns because it couldn't be spread as easily. Imagine if you just took out an entire continent or entire country or something like that from that link. And again, then all those people are immune. They're not even dealing with the flu. And we think of the flu as just this inevitable thing. The flu we know that goes around the world nonstop originated in Hong Kong in 1968. It is not something that has been with us from time immemorial. Like, it has been killing 500,000 people minimum every year since 1968. There are plenty of people walking around the earth that were here before that flu existed.
It was the perfect serial killer in that it didn't get too big for its britches. It killed at a level that like would never was going to raise too many alarms.
500,000 seems like a huge fucking level. That's the thing. Like 500,000 every year. We can predict it.
Clearly, we have not done enough to stop it.
Yes. I mean, you are right. And I do feel sometimes like I'm the insane guy on the street corner, like screaming about Armageddon coming. But I'm like, just get your fucking flu shots, everybody. This is the easiest thing. We have been given a gift. It's called a flu shot. Let's all use it.
Yeah, you definitely are the detective, like, screaming at the sergeant. Listen, I'm telling you, this killer. What do you mean, lay off? I can't. Don't pursue this, sergeant.
Between my early predictions of coronavirus and my flu stuff, I often feel like I'm fucking Jeff Goldblum in Independence Day, and, like, nobody's listening.
you want us to give the flu a cold? That doesn't make any sense, buddy.
I want you to punch it in the face. Thank you, audience, for coming back to Science Faction 697, where you learned all about how we were wrong about cerebral palsy and how we might have just developed a universal flu vaccine. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 698.
Oh, shit. No more flu vaccine? That's 90% of my excuses why I don't show up to work.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.